Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode of the Dr. Will Show. I am going back, people. I wouldn't say that this is the new Dr. Will Show, but I am returning to the roots of this show because I admit to sort of going too heavy on entrepreneurship, but I am not leaving. This show is going back to its roots, to focusing on the whole teacher. We are going back to being a show that is going to be focusing on personal development, which will include personal finance and getting to you developing your whole self. And yes, it will still include a nice dose of becoming an entrepreneur, because I do believe in still making the impact and the income and making that shift and returning to what this podcast was meant to be. I am going back to an old friend, Angela Myers. We have seen her on the stage, y'all. We've seen her, you know, and I wanted to have her on to talk about success and what does that really mean, especially now in which so many things are happening all around us and you can do so many things for a job nowadays. I mean, you can make a job out of thin air if you want to with an iPad and internet. I mean, so it's so different now. So I wanted to have her on the show to get her to drop some gems for you and to get you hyped up. So for those who will be listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Simplecast, Stitcher, Spotify, and I want to bring in, welcome Angela Myers. Angela, will you please reintroduce yourself?
Absolutely. I'm so happy to be here, Will. I'm just like, I've been watching you, and even though we haven't connected for a while, you're always in my sphere, and I'm so honored to be here. Like, I remember when Edupreneur first came out, and we were part of that conversation. And like, it is whether you like, I think there's a confusion on what an entrepreneur is, what an edupreneur is, what a business owner is, what self success is. All of those things are all in this pile, but it isn't about the product. It is about the value that you bring. It is about understanding ourselves. It's about self-awareness more than it is a product or a service. And so whether you actually pursue an entrepreneurial like product or experience, you are becoming a different person in the process through these mindsets and these behaviors, because entrepreneurs think differently, act differently, see the world differently than people that are more geared toward what I would say traditional employment. And neither is bad, but there's a difference between an employee and an entrepreneur.
We are cooking. I love speaking to her because y'all don't know this, but Angela was the first person I interviewed for The Edupreneur. And during that interview, I knew I had something special. I knew it. And I was like, oh, y'all, this is going to be so good. So I'm glad to have her on the podcast. So you have done so much and people have seen you do so many things. How do you personally define success at this stage in your life?
So it's going to be a definition like I've been really working on this. There's a book that influenced me very early on in my career from the business. It was presented in the business world first, and it was Jim Collins' Good to Great. And I remember reading the first sentence of that, thinking like, "Wow, his publisher made a big error." Like, that sentence shouldn't be, because he said, good is the enemy of great, the enemy of great. And the reason we have very few great leaders or great schools or great organizations, because we have so many good ones. And that just like stopped me in my tracks, because it goes against the mindset and the behavior of everything I was educated in, because we are told, we experience, we are reinforced that if you do a little bit, you try to be a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better, and then you become great. And that is absolutely not the right mindset, because it is the enemy of great. It isn't that great is harder to achieve than good, but it requires a completely different pathway, personally, professionally. And so I keep thinking about this topic, success and significance, because of all of the research on mattering and significance. Is success, in the way society defines success, the enemy of significance? So that is my pondering question for today, my big essential question. Is success, in the way that we strive for it, in the way the world presents it right now, in the way schools present it, is that the enemy of significance? And the reason we aren't living more meaningful lives, or not showing our students how to pursue a life worth living, is because we are so good at helping them become successful. So what do you think?
Wow.
I know, we're starting off deep, my friend. Deep, deep, deep.
Wow. For me, when it comes to schools, overall, we have schools the wrong way, because we focus on test scores and the metrics of that, to me, have no real bearing on someone's success and don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, and only matter to those individuals who seek out those type of trophies, or people who are driven by those type of things.
Outside rewards.
I believe that we should be trying to tap into the natural born gifts and talents that each of us have. I think that's what schools should be doing, and trying to help kids discover those, develop those, and cultivate those.
Absolutely.
And then allow kids to grow in those areas so that when they do leave, they will be in a better place to understand where their path forward goes. So if it's to go to a trade school or community college or higher ed or the workforce, or even to start a business, they will have clarity in it and be better prepared to do that. I think that's what K-12 should be doing. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, I think higher ed should be doing more of that as well. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So that's my thinking.
I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't. I think that the hard part is, what does that look like operationalized? And that's really what I've been trying to tackle. Because what you're really talking about, without saying it out loud, is a life worth living is a life that matters. And mattering has two consistent or two critical conditions. The first condition is that you know you have value, and that value is absolute. It is not dependent on outside forces. Worthiness is an immutable truth. You matter, period, because you exist. But the part that we don't attend to in mattering, and I think is a lot about where entrepreneurs get their purpose and their wherewithal and their spirit, is that the goal of that is to share that value with others. So much of success is defined by individualism and not otherness. We are trying to get ahead. We might like be rewarded for stomping over somebody else to climb this ladder to get this link and this and this. And inevitably, there's going to be somebody above you or below you. And so you're in a constant state of comparison, of perfectionism, of what I call enoughness, where if I did more, or if I did this, there's all these conditions on your worthiness. And that is not healthy. And in the end, you may get that wrong. You may get that ladder. You may have made it over 99% of the people, but are you truly fulfilled? Are you satisfied? Are you complete? And the answer in many, many cases, from very famous people to everyday people, is that that doesn't fulfill us. It might grab our attention and our energy for a moment, but it's like infatuation. It's fleeting. It might seem cool in the moment. And I don't mean that we shouldn't have goals and we shouldn't have ambition. It is different. So the way that I define success now, taking in all of that, how I want to live my life and what brings life meaning, is that I want to find a meaningful need and fill that better than anyone else. And to me, that is success. It is understanding that somebody else in the world needs exactly what you have and only you can offer. And that the reason that we are so rare and precious is because we bring to the world and we bring to the workforce something that no other person can deliver and can share in the way that you can, Will, or in the way that I can. And so in that, there's no competition. There's no somebody is above or below. There's only pushing yourself through goals and ambitions to become better at knowing how you can serve other people. And that is the critical components of mattering, of truly flourishing, and knowing that what you do is attributing to who you are seeking to become.
So has that changed for you over the years?
And if so, absolutely.
How has that shifted for you?
Absolutely. So the battle of worthiness that I've spent my whole life is with perfectionism. It isn't really comparison to other people, but the need to be like I was that student. I probably still am in some respects. Like I'm in the front seat and I'm taking notes. And if I got an A minus, it would send me into whatever. It was, the goal was about, I have to do this and I need to do this and I will never be enough unless I do this. So I put all of these conditions, and this is before social media. So I just want you to think about our young people right now. My battle with enoughness is not unique. Like when you are pursuing this massive to-do list, I've got to do this and this and this, and when I'm done, I'll feel this way. There was an emptiness after every achievement. There was an emptiness after this goal. There was an emptiness. And then you're on to the next thing, and you find yourself completely out of balance. And I think I did not have a world that was at my fingertips 24 hours a day pushing insignificant things. So it isn't just grades and colleges and letters behind my name and all of that. This person that is under 50 filters, and I've only got this many likes and I've only got this many shares. I can't imagine what young people are going through on this pathway to meaning and purpose. And no wonder that our young people are so messed up, because it can mess with adults. It can mess with very grounded people, social media. And so if we do not orient kids to what is truly going to bring them fulfillment, and I don't mean happiness. Happiness is different than flourishing. When we are flourishing in our lives, we understand there is going to be turmoil, there is going to be sadness, there's going to be scars, there's going to be all of those things. And each and every one of them is in our path to teach us something. Like my scars are proof of my courage and proof of my strength. So I'm not looking for a happy life. Happy is a consequence of a meaningful life. My goal is meaning. My goal is to matter, period. And that is your goal and everyone else's goal, because that is fundamentally, biologically wired in our DNA. It's not just a nice to have. We fail to thrive when we pursue something less, when we choose the other road. And our guarantee is we might win every award, get every grade with every accolade. And that doesn't mean when we lay our heads down at night on our pillows that there's this sense of, and we'll talk about balance later, but this sense of true calmness in the midst of pure chaos. And that only comes from knowing that every day you have the ability to find and fill a need, a meaningful need of someone else using your gifts and your perspective and your talents. And it doesn't have to be a grand emotion. It can be in a moment. It's my definition of success.
So what's the difference between achieving your goals and actually feeling like you matter, that you are contributing based upon filling that need that only you can?
Absolutely. You said the key word, contribution. That is the other side of mattering that no one talks about. The deepest driver of human behavior is to know that you are needed and counted on by another human being. So when we take others out of the equation in however we define success, we are already setting ourselves up for heartbreak and confusion and a constant need to fill and to push ourselves. So the way I explain it to kids is that we all operate, whether we are conscious about it or deliberate about it, we all operate from two lists. We have our to-do list, which is a part of our goals and ambitions. I need to get this done today. I need to do this. But very rarely do consciously attend to, is what we're doing every day getting me closer to the human being, the teacher, the parent, the friend that I am seeking to be? And so it isn't that they are in opposition of each other. They need to be in service of each other. And the order matters. If we start with our to-be list, who am I seeking to be? Who am I seeking to be as an educator? Who am I seeking to be as a partner? Who am I seeking to be as a human being in this time and space? Then are the things that I am doing every day getting me closer to that or pulling me away? And that's where incongruency happens. And it's in that space of, it's not ambiguity, it's in that space of incongruency. That's where we start feeling discomfort and disheartenment and all of those other things, because what we're doing every day isn't putting anything towards. In fact, it can take us away from the things that really matter. And that's what self-awareness is all about.
So how do you balance personal fulfillment, that sense of self of, okay, I'm all right, I'm doing this, versus these other responsibilities like family and friends and financial stability?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't believe in balance. I don't believe in work-life balance. And I know that is probably unpopular, but even the word balance means that there's this temptation to start thinking in opposites when our life is in the gray area. I need to do more of this and less of this. So there's all these outside attributes that fight us in ways that aren't healthy, because no matter what you do, you feel guilty. You either feel like you're doing too much and you're not appreciated, or you're not doing enough, or whatever you're doing isn't making a difference, and you are in this constant state of wobbliness. Congruency, on the other hand, is about balancing your effort and energy and your impact so that the person you are seeking to become, whatever that is, whether it is an influential leader or it's a phenomenal teacher or a powerful podcaster, if you just look at outside metrics that determine what that is, or you look at the definition of how is what I'm doing impacting others, that the more, because the market, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, is very clear that when you fill a meaningful need that no one else can fill, you will be pursued in the marketplace. And the challenge is, a lot of entrepreneurs go in it with their attention and effort on their product or their to-do list. I want to hit this number. I want to hit that. I want to hit that. I want to, if I get to this metric, when I get those words, if and then and just and only, are very dangerous words. They're dangerous words because they take us away from our focus and energy toward meaning, toward purpose, towards providing value. And so when you're looking at what are the heartaches out there? What are the gaps out there? So one of the things I take my student leaders through is what I call compassion-driven innovation, that we don't look at what our passions are, what our heart is guiding us to. Passion matters for sustainability, but I ask them not to follow their heart. I ask them to follow heartbreak. And if you follow heartbreak in the marketplace, what is missing in people's lives? What experiences do they run to? What are the things that they're searching and don't even know that they need those yet? And you fill those gaps, you will be not only employable, you will sustain the impact you're going to make. You won't be looking for your next thing. Now, that said, there's always going to be a push and tug, because not everyone in your world sees success in that way. So you've got to really be grounded, especially as an entrepreneur, in your own value. And not from a place of hubris or a place of superiority or a place of comparison, but a place of uniqueness, place of your, in the world of work, we call that your unique value proposition, your UVP. If you know what your UVP is, I promise you, I say this to kids all the time, there is somebody in this room or in the world that needs exactly what you have and only you can deliver. And there's nothing hubris about that. And that's the competition every day.
So you believe that passion is something that you discover or something that you create?
I've changed my thoughts on passion because I wrote a whole book on passion. I interviewed all these companies on passion. And the root word of passion means to suffer. But where passion matters is there are a lot of things that you might be good at, a lot of things that you might like doing. But when passion takes over, the condition for passion is when it gets hard, when it gets uncomfortable, when you're bad at it, when you cannot take one more step or one more breath and you're going to give up. Passion is the voice and the action and the energy that says, don't you dare, because not doing this is akin to not breathing for me. And that's where passion takes over. So passion is needed because you need resilience and you need grit and you need, you know, tenacity and determination to do things, because the bigger impact you want to make, the more resistance there is to that. And you're going to need passion to get you through it. So right now, if somebody said, Angela, which they've said for a long time, you've got to give up this mattering stuff. It doesn't, you know what? You can say that. You can feel that. You can hurt it. And then I dig down further. So it like not talking about it, not sharing what mattering actually is and why this science is so transformative is akin to breathing for me. Just like if you asked me not to teach, I couldn't do it. I couldn't live my life and not teach. My life would not be worth living. So
I've watched a lot of videos where people talk about you don't have a focus problem, you have a systems problem. You don't have a strategy problem, you have a systems problem. What practices or routines or mindsets that you put in place that keep you aligned to what matters most to you?
It is the otherness factor. So if you think about even the definition of a personal brand, or you think about how educators brand versus how entrepreneurs brand, the big difference is where the focus and attention is. You're not saying, this is what I know, this is what I can do, this is who I am, so that you can watch me because I've achieved XYZ. Education is built on that hierarchy. The more letters behind your name, the more, and there's no, I'm not saying anything negative. I'm just saying a fact that is what defines your value in our space. When you have done XYZ on this very, very limited world scale of success in this bubble. But when you focus on how is who I'm becoming and what I'm doing impacting other people, when you think about the web and how the actual web is structured, is based on your influence and your impact is based on how other people perceive you, how other people would share or come to you, how you're needed by the world. So just take LinkedIn. When you look at LinkedIn, it is not a place for you to post your resume or a 10-page list of everything you've done. LinkedIn is algorithm, as well as many, many other spaces, are based on what other people say, your gift, your skill, your talent, your impact. And congruency comes from being able to look at that list, how you're perceived by the world. And congruency happens when that is aligned with who you're trying to be, because people perceive you from their own frame, from their own lens. And people that are congruent, they don't just know who they are. They know who they are in order to serve and impact because of that. And that's a really hard life thing. And we are teaching and rewarding and celebrating the complete opposite of that. Literally the complete opposite of that. We focus so much on what you know and what you can do. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you know and what you can do. The last thought, Harvard did this longitudinal study. It's the longest longitudinal study on human behavior. And at end of life, the question that was asked after this 89-year study wasn't, did I do this? Am I muted right now? Unmute. How do I turn?
You're back on. Now you're muted.
Doing that. Sorry. Now I'm on? Okay, perfect. It wasn't, could I have done more? Did I? Because if you think about that language or mindset, I'll be happy when I get this, when I do this, when I achieve this. That's a very surface level, deeply unfulfilling accomplishment. Even though we think it's going to be so fulfilling. There are stories upon stories about Olympic athletes, or if you look at some of the most talented people in our world, they have money beyond means. They have talent that is, I mean, breathtaking, and they are still living unhealthy, unsatisfied lives, fighting for something. It's just so, like, I had this discussion with this group today, like looking at what is the human, what are the human parts of AI? And I look at, like, we have not very good models out there, whether it's Hollywood or whether it's our leaders, of individuals that are grounded with this mindset. Every single person that has achieved something is still chasing something. It's actually so sad to see these amazingly accomplished, talented human beings still like, it's not enough. I need to do this, and I need to do this, and I need to not wear clothes, and I need to like do this shock thing, and I need to do this to stay relevant. You're relevant when you impact people's lives. You're relevant every day to someone out there who needs exactly what you have. And you're choosing to focus on I instead of you. We have forgot otherness. We are dependent on our ability to nurture one another's spirit. That's why there's just so much, we're so turned around in our world right now, because it is this or that. You need to think like I do, or you need to believe what I do, instead of listening to one another, instead of seeing one another through human eyes, not through eyes of something that, no, it's just like, it hurts my heart thinking about it. It really does.
So how do you reconcile ambition with contentment?
I have mass ambition. Ambition isn't the antithesis of significance or of contentment. You're most content when your goals are audacious and your goals are in, what I want to say, compassing your impact on other people. So again, the two fundamental biological conditions of mattering are that we understand our value and our uniqueness, and we are able to share that value with others. The very definition of what it means to matter is to be of significance to the world around you and the people in it. And so if you are not thinking about the world around you and people in it, because you are so consumed with what you need to consume and who you need to be and who, that ambition is empty ambition, because it often leads to a path of very unfulfilled, successful people. You can name case study after case study after case study of incredible human beings that the world needs, that the world is less than because they're gone. And they could not find that contentment along the way. They turn to drugs or alcohol or a million other things, and they're always searching. And there's not very many models out there of leaders who operate truly with this foundation. I can't think of a single politician, which is why it's so sad out there. Yeah, I'll step on your back to get to this, and I'll throw you under the bus to get to that. And then we wonder why our humanity is broken.
I can say, I'm just going to say it. I'm going to get
no,
myself.
Say it.
I'm going to get myself in trouble. I'm going to say this.
I'm always in trouble, Will. That's all right.
This country isn't the country it was when, and of course, you know, I wasn't alive then. But when people were told to make sacrifices for the country as a collective, but I can't believe,
absolutely.
And I don't remember what war that was. But people were told, make these sacrifices,
absolutely,
for the country. And everybody right. was about the good of
we
the
were
whole
united.
Country.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a different spirit.
100%.
And even the CEOs of the country did not make what they make now. They made right. good money, but if you looked at their salaries
absolutely.
Then, it was
absolutely.
Way, way lower.
Absolutely. Look at all of our public servants. They are multimillionaires with, like, how can a public servant be, and I have nothing wrong with people who make their way, but it is the level of influence and privilege and inequity that they embody. And I mean, the collective they. There isn't, I mean, rewarded for what? Because it just, yeah, I yes. absolutely understand what you're saying.
It was different. And now we don't have a collective. We have a eye for eye, and we have a us versus them.
Yes.
And we don't have a understanding that in order for us to truly become the best that we can be, is that we all have to give. And those who have been the most blessed of us do have to give up a little more in order for everyone to have a little better. Because when we as a collective can be better, we all get a come up. And I don't know why people don't really understand that.
Because
right?
we've lost community. So what kept us in check as human beings since the beginning of civilization was being a contributing member to a community. And so I grew up in a small town in Iowa with like 641 people. Like, I think it's 1,000 people right now. It's like a big metropolis. But I think underneath it, there were these hidden rules of a small town. And then the web exacerbated that. In fact, that was the discussion we had today. Underneath that, billions of people on it, it's still about community. So understanding in community, everyone matters. Everyone matters. Especially in a small town in Iowa, in the middle of 20 below zero weather, that you could be frozen. So you always said and acknowledged another human being in that community. And there was this lore that went around, like, I don't know who started it, but if you didn't say hi to your neighbor, and neighbor, like, and actually mean it, you didn't say hi to somebody, you don't have to be best friends with them or have your kids play together, but you acknowledge every human being as somebody that mattered, because that human being probably was the fire chief, the mayor, a teacher at school, and on the weekends, you know, ran Bible school. Like, it's, you had a million jobs, the smaller your community was, and one person not contributing affected everything. And so you don't have that anymore. We don't have that in physical spaces anymore. We're in apartments, we're by ourselves, we're scared of the world. We shut our kids in. They don't go outside and play. We don't invite people to our table and break bread with them. All those things that built the strength of this nation and our world, quite frankly. So when the web was first created, there was this doctrine on the web of the people that brought it together, and it was called the Clue Train Manifesto. And in the Clue Train Manifesto, it built the principles and practices of what the evolution of the web should be. And there were 96 tenants, and those 96 tenants were like, they could have written that for every small town in America. They absolutely could have written that. The more that technology became the priority and not people, and technology amplifying people's capabilities, we started losing our way, and we started losing community, and we started becoming a member of what we thought was a community, but it's a member of some collective. And that's really different. That's a follower. That's not a contributing member. It's always somebody else saying, believe this, think this, do this. It's not a cult, but there's attributes of a cult in that, because your now identity is about being associated with this element of society, whether it's a party, a political party, or whatever. So we started losing that our goal was to follow and be a part of it, but not to matter in it. We think that belonging comes before mattering. Mattering comes first. You can belong to a lot of things and not feel like you matter. You only feel like you matter when someone acknowledges that your contribution was valuable. And it doesn't have to be a grand gesture. It is that you made an effort to see somebody else in your presence and pause for them, honor them. These are conditions of being human. They're not conditions of running a business or conditions of the world and the web. They're conditions of being human. That's where we get our dignity. When somebody acknowledges our presence, when somebody appreciates us, when somebody values us, when they see that we value them, when we hear them, when we see them, when we listen to them. These are fundamental biological principles. They are wired in our DNA, and we ignore them at our peril. We absolutely ignore them. And if we get back to our foundation as human beings and look at what are the conditions and circumstances in which human beings have survived since the beginning of time, when there truly was trauma, when there was war, when there was uncertainty, when there was a time that we can't even conceptualize because we live in this privileged world with all of our conveniences at our fingertips. That's why I love historical fiction. I'm just so drawn to stories of the human conditions, that we are capable of triumph. We are capable of reaching new levels, but we are incapable of it singularly. The factor that moves through all of that, through impact, through change, is each other. We need each other, and we need to be a part of true communities. And our kids, honest to God, aren't growing up with that. They don't know what it's like to be a valued member of a community, because everything is about their individual achievement. And we have got to change that. We have got to change that, or we don't survive.
Yeah, we will, you know, we'll see.
I have hope. I have faith in the human spirit, and I have faith in the power we have in our moments with each other. It is not this change that we so need and hope for doesn't happen by these grand figures or through grand gestures. They literally happen moment to moment. And we can create those moments with each other. We can create those moments with each other.
That's all right. That's all right. well, all right. All right.
Is that a good all right?
Yeah, it is. It is a good all right. Yeah. I do want to. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know we were going to go there with that one.
I never know where my brain is going to go. Well, I just never do. So bless your heart for just going with me. That's what I'm feeling in my heart today. I had this big online event with people that are working to think about what the next evolution is. I said in this event today, I said, this is like the Clue Train Manifesto 3.0, except the stakes are much higher than if we believe in this thing called the internet. We are in that phase. This isn't about a new app. It's not about the iPhone. It's not about even AI. It is about the people that saw and visualized how the internet was going to change us forever. There would be a BG, a before Google and an after. This is that moment for us. And so those same people are coming together thinking about what are the tenets that must be if we are to evolve as a humanity in this new space, in the presence and in partnership with AI. I guess being in that conversation all morning from people from all different perspectives, from the actual technologists on the web to the people that are behind a lot of the AI, to tech companies, to just regular people like me, and what that means for us, and what does it mean for our work as educators, and all of that. It's really heavy stuff. But at the end of the day, the web was built around human beings. It started with human-centered design, where humans are at the forefront, and humans, we didn't open it up for there to be more apps. We opened it up so human beings could connect with each other, could share with each other, could be more useful to each other, to find people to impact that we never would be able to. And that still deep, deep down is what the purpose of technology is to advance our humanity. But we have to find our humanity before we look at what kinds of elements of our humanity are we going to advance and amplify. Because if we don't have that grounding, then what is advanced and amplified at our present state of humanity should be something that terrifies all of us.
Yeah, we're in bad shape, and that is,
we have the possibility to change that. So yes, we are in bad shape. And so another thing that Jim Collins shared that changed me was this concept of autopsy without blame. He didn't look at the results; he looked at the process and literally autopsied all of the things that were on the table. And your goal wasn't to be like, this was good and this was bad, or this is better and this is that. What are the patterns that exist in this when we autopsy it without blame? And we say, do we want to do better? Is doing this and having this and being this advancing our humanity, or is it not? And we it takes a very strong humanity to autopsy without blame. We are so quick to blame because it makes us feel superior. We're so quick to judge and to tell other people, you need to do this. And if you don't do this, then you get this and I'll act this way. Instead of looking at our humanity and trying to advance it together.
It's
because we're not a community.
It's hard to have conversations with people who don't see like what's in front of them, right? And who don't have memories, right? Because I like there's an example that comes to mind. I don't want to bring it up, but because I saw this article and I was watching this article and I was thinking, okay, so you had this experience then. So why did you turn around and do this? Knowing you had this experience then, because that should have told you not to repeat the behavior, but you did it again. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's sort of like where I am. And, I'm also at a point, let's just get transparent at this point. I'm also at a point where I've not had anyone personally walk up to me and yell out the N-word or look at me crazy or say anything to my wife. But I have seen things online. And I have heard people say things, about the intelligence of people who look like me and to hear people who are elected, who are supposed to fight
advancing
the betterment of all people, not quash that type of talk. And to then have people downplay slavery and to have people say, we're going to remove these slavery artifacts from the museum because slavery wasn't that bad.
Anybody say that today? Oh, I just want to say, I'm sorry to hear.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry to hear that. It is, I think that's what's so hard now about defying one another's dignity. So easy to do online. It is, because you don't have to look at somebody. You don't have to see them as a human being. They can be an avatar or a little picture or all of that. And there has to be some reward that for a moment that because based on that hierarchy, you advance when other people are below you. That is what you're rewarded for, that you get first place, somebody gets second. That you get this score and 90% of people. So we have been rewarded for decades from every aspect of our society and our schooling that in order for you to feel success, other people have to fail. And that is so fundamentally flawed. And I'm not saying that there's not a place for competition or that there's not a place for that. But competition is very different than community. Because you don't advance unless you are supporting and amplifying another person, unless you are there in a meaningful way or you show up in a meaningful way that impacts somebody else. You don't advance. Biologically, we don't advance. We fail to thrive when we don't matter. And when we don't feel significant to others around us, it affects every aspect of our being, of our living, of our ability. So I believe that the internet has made it easier to amplify that mindset and that behavior. And then instead of just trying to get ahead with one person who has to fail, we want entire groups of people to fail because that's easier and we are more superior and we are able to look down on you. We are able to judge. Part of that is human nature. It's not that in communities there isn't this infighting, but at the end of the day, communities rally together. At the end of the day, I think I keep going back to your question about where we're at. Communities are driven by purpose and a vision. And if our only purpose and vision is to be better than somebody else, to be morally superior, to be academically superior, to be culturally superior. It's in our own head. It isn't, you can find 20 people that say you're not. So it's just, it is a never-ending scale of comparison and competition. And those don't advance humanity in the same way community advances humanity. We are biologically driven to want to be a part of something meaningful and purposeful. And when communities have that vision, when we have that focus, that's why the best of humanity, believe it or not, shows up at the worst of times. Like I think about the Boston Marathon, we are Boston strong. In Evergreen, in Colorado, where I'm at, where the last school shooting was a week ago, there's an entire band of human beings that probably are on every side and every which way of the political spectrum. They are all band together because we are Evergreen. So there is, if we can bring more purpose and meaning to the front of what we do. And we say that we do that in education. I'm not talking about a mission statement and a vision statement. I'm talking about if this is who we are, then every one of our behaviors and our to-dos and our actions need to reflect that. We cannot say this is where we want kids to be or this is what we want to be and then act and behave and celebrate and reward this, and we are just unwilling to autopsy without blame these practices. One of the best books on community, that the person who helped put language and sense making to what I grew up with was Peter Block. He has a book called Community. It's just this little thing, and his research is profound, and it's decades of anthropology and psychology and sociology and now neurology. Like, we don't function as individuals. We were not designed to be individualistic. And I mean that both as an elite group or as an individual, where we were able to thrive without thinking of others. We were meant to exist because of and in the presence of other people. And we have lost that. We have absolutely lost that. And I don't know how to, I just want everybody to go back to a kindergarten classroom, because that's how it happens purely. I want everybody to live for a week in a small town where you truly need each other because of the circumstances. It's a totally different, it's a totally different environment than we have around. It's us versus them and them versus us and this versus that. And you try to get in this because you think you'll feel more fulfilled if they accept you. It's important that you accept you and that you know who you are, and wherever you are, there is someone else, I'm going to say this again, that needs exactly what you have. And as if we get back to being, this sounds so silly and so simplistic, neighborly again, it's a whole different world. And it doesn't start at the organization level. It starts at the individual level. It starts with reaching out to people or surrounding yourself with people who are different than you, who disagree with you, who you don't understand, because your job is to understand their behaviors so that you don't react in the same way, and to unite under a singular purpose. And that's what we don't have as a country right now. We don't have a united purpose. We don't know why we exist. We knew why we existed 50 years ago, and we knew why we existed on 9/12. I was in Pennsylvania at an elementary school a few miles from the Pentagon bombing. And it was the most surreal experience, because I was in the classroom doing a demonstration lesson with fourth and fifth graders. And it just, your entire reality blows up. This is before cell phones. It's before anything. And I am 27 hours away and nowhere to get a hold of my family. All the phone lines were down. There was no, like, all of this. I like had a rental car. I went to the airport. I'm like, I don't know what to do. But a band of probably 30 people from the Pentagon, they had soot all over their shirt and blood and debris in their hair. We caravaned these complete strangers, these 40 human beings from every walk of life, caravaned all the way from Pennsylvania to the Midwest. And I would not have survived without them. That's who we are as people. That's who shows up after a disaster. That's who shows up when unity is needed. We need that humanity to show up right now. This is a pandemic at a whole different level. It's invisible. and we just need each other. Mm-hmm. We just need each other. And I know that sounds so like ethereal, but it isn't. It's the absolute biological truth that you cannot ignore.
All right. So before we go, what is your advice to someone who they are successful, they have money, they're looking good. The club, right? They got the house, they got the vehicle, but they don't feel fulfilled.
It goes back to that same thing. Meaning and material things are not mutually exclusive. So there's no problem to be rewarded for the value that you offer. But simply having everything given to you or everything even earned for you has, if it is not attached to meaning. And again, where do we get meaning? We get meaning in purpose and meaning in service. Meaning happens with and in the presence of other people. So my students, my first year of teaching, you had the saying, our goal today is to be somebody's somebody. And that meant that you were the reason. We had these things called wow moments where every day we just ended the day by sharing, what was your wow moment? It was when so-and-so made me smile. It was when I helped, you know, Will do this. It was at recess. It was these like obscure, like almost insignificant moments, seconds during the day that nobody saw and nobody noticed, but you went, wow. And so we started noticing, five-year-olds started noticing this pattern as we shared our wow moments. The biggest wow moments, the ones that made us want to run to school the next day, were the wow moments that involved somebody else. When Angela made me feel this way, when I didn't think I could make it, when Will started smiling and at the beginning of our conversation, he was in a different place. We have the power to be somebody's somebody. And again, it takes seconds. You have no idea what someone else is carrying. You have no idea amidst whether it is a man on the street or a man that makes $10 million on Wall Street. You have no idea what they're carrying. And you have a chance to show somebody what really matters. And if you strive every day to be somebody, somebody, biologically, that comes back to you because you know then you truly matter. That is a life well lived.
That's all right. That's all right. Now, people, Angela, thank you.
Yes, I got to show this. So we've been talking about, I'm doing a little plug because I feel so passionate. This book has been writing itself for 30 years. And I feel so passionate about these topics like purpose and meaning and authenticity and all of these things. So I took the science of mattering, and thought about how each of these letters. So my subtitle is A Pathway to Meaning, Purpose, and Joy, One Letter at a Time. So each letter represents an aspect of something that we can think about, embody, do for ourselves and one another to make sure that our pathway is towards significance and that it is lasting and impactful. And I just have to show you because I'm really, really proud because my son did the digital illustrations. So like that is enough. E is for enough. I just am so, when I look at these pictures, it's like my whole heart is out there because we do have these elements in us. We just haven't given them language. And to know that each and every one of these actions can lead you on that pathway to meaning, purpose, and joy, I feel like I would be content to know that people were talking about this and taking action on this.
Awesome. And there'll be links in the show notes for people to go get it.
Yes, yes.
All right. Thank you for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, my friend. What an honor. You matter, my friend. I just want you to know that. You matter and you keep impacting. You keep talking about this. You keep moving forward and you keep standing strong. I've never, ever felt like I've fit in anywhere or that I've been like fully accepted. I've always felt like just on the cusp of like, I'm not really an ed tech person. I was a literacy person. I'm not really a social media person, but I'm always on the fringe of these amazing communities. And when I stopped focusing on what I needed to do or who I needed to be, I looked at where am I making the most impact? And that is where my attention and energy goes. And it's just been a very calming experience to not, I mean, I absolutely care what people think about me, but it doesn't drive what my convictions are. I'm okay that people don't like me, or I'm okay that I'm not included, and I'm okay where I'm not the top one picked. I can pick myself. And that's what I've been doing for 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right,
so pick
people.
Yourself. Yeah. Thank you.
Now, folks, you know how I do this. This podcast episode is going to be on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Simplecast, Stitcher, and Spotify. And though I'm on all major podcast platforms, I'm trying to grow on Apple Podcasts. So don't forget to listen. Share it, people.
Yeah.
Leave your reviews and listen, because they check that out. And I'm trying to get Oprah on the show because I want her to know that we're doing big things around here. So I want you, man, give it up again for Angela Myers for coming on and dropping so many
keys.
And
give it up to you. I'm so proud of you, my friend. So, so proud of you.
Thank you.
You keep on.
Thank you.
You keep shining that light.
I appreciate it. Alhamdulillah. Thank you again, y'all, for checking out another episode of Dr. Will Show. Again, y'all, coming strong for 11 years, the Mobile University of Entrepreneurs. As always, people, invest in you, EDU. Peace.